Okay. Here we are up here at Mother's Day on May 11th or something, 1997. Stan is going to start telling me some stuff about his folks. All the kids, the family stuff.
Okay, well, let's see. Dad was born in Scaticook. Actually, he was born on a farm just across the river from the Knickerbocker Mansion. He was born May 22nd, 1925. He married my mother in August 12th, 1948. My mother was from Stillwater, which is from where we're standing right now, about 2 miles the other direction.
What was her maiden name?
Her maiden name was Aldrich.
Aldrich. What's your first name?
Aline Aldrich from Stillwater. And actually her dad...
See, I called your dad Eisman in the newsletter. You know what? You get going down a place, and I check all of the text, but I don't check the pictures. And it just was one of those stupids. You know, where you transpose
Stan.
And it just, and I...
No, when I said that, I thought, wait, he just dropped the A and wrote Stan Eisman.
That's exactly what I did.
Yeah. Let's see, my dad had one older sister, and that's all he had.
He's been on a farm all his life?
Well, he has lived on a farm all his life. The farm he was born on, Scaticook, they moved around when he was a couple years old. Another farm, another couple miles northeast of there, where my grandparents lived, and where my father built a house next door, and where he lived, and where my brother built another house next door to that, and where he lived. So we're on the fourth generation, because my brother has a little boy who should be living up there on the Hem Street farm, and it's called Hem Street Road too. Yeah.
I saw a Hem Street Park.
Yeah. Right over there.
It's just as I came across the river down there.
Our Hem Street ancestors, who were Dutch, by the way, von Heemstraten, back in the early 1800s, Charles Heemstreet is what he was called at that point, moved up from Cahoes, where he had a farm. And actually, he got mad because they were putting a canal in alongside the Hudson River, and they took his front yard, and he got mad and left Cahoes and came up to Scaticook. And so he bought the farm that's really just over the hill from here, which has a Knickerbocker name somewhere on the deed. And so that's where another one of my ancestors, and actually it's that Hem Street there that married into the Knickerbocker family.
Okay.
So, you know, they were all from the same valley.
Yeah, sure,
essentially the same area.
And nobody got out of here in those days. You bury whoever was
around. We haven't left yet, you know.
No. Well, that's what happened.
What about the only ones who haven't left? That's the thing. Well, anyway, back to Dad. Dad and Mom were married in 1948. And Dad was a pilot. He was training to be a pilot for World War II. He had not quite finished the pilot training when World War II ended, much to his disappointment. So he didn't get a chance to get across the ocean and fight in the war, but he, after the war and after marrying my mom, went to Spartan School of Aeronautics, came back home here, and they didn't need pilots because
there were so many left from the war.
So, but they had just opened what is now the Stratton Air Force Base, Stratton Air National Guard Base over in Schenectady. It used to be called the 109th Air Tactical. And they were looking for workers over there. Dad also had his mechanics license to work on the plane. So he went over there to get a job, and he actually went in to see if he could fly, and they didn't have a job, and he said, well, I'm also a mechanic, so they hired him on as a mechanic early on in about 1948, you know, soon after he was married. And that mechanic's job worked into him finally being able to fly, and eventually... he became commander of the air base.
Really? Was he in the reserves?
Well, it's an Air National Guard.
Yeah.
And so he became commander. He became a colonel in the Air National Guard.
Geez, nice.
When he retired as a general in the New York State Air National Guard, he had more flying hours than anybody else in the United States Air Force.
Awesome.
So,
I never realized that.
Yeah.
Looking at him, you'd think he would...
And actually, he turned down being a general several years before that, because we always maintained, or I shouldn't say we, me until I left, the Hem Street farm up in Scaticook. And it was never a huge farm, but it was always farmed. My grandfather always had cows for a few years and horses. So There were always some pigs or chickens or sheep, depending on, you know, on the whim of the day,
sure,
so to
sure.
speak. But there was always something. I grew up milking cows by hand, baling hay, all the things farm kids did. And we kind of held down the fort while Dad went off on his Air National Guard trek. And he changed from jets to C-97s and then C-130s. So he did a lot of transporting around the world, quite literally. He'd be gone 2 or 3 weeks at a time. So we would be the ones who'd have to go out and take care of the
animals. But it was still kind of a part-time job for him. He came home at night.
He always came home
sure,
at night.
Sure.
And then they got the Greenland mission. So he was in Greenland, and now they have the Antarctica mission. So he says that they fly with skis. They're one of the only units in the world that flies with skis. And Dad was instrumental in getting that started over at Schenectady Air Base, flying with the skis. That was really fun. He thought that was fun. Anyhow, so now he flies tractors instead of airplanes because he's retired.
So he's back to farming.
He's back to farming. He's doing a lot. He still has done, ever since his retirement 12 years ago, corn all over. They have cows on the farm. Actually, they're more my brothers than my father's these days. He doesn't milk anymore. They have beavers. And I don't think they have any horses anymore. He has one or two horses, but I think they're gone. So I think they're just down to the cows. But there's a number of them, so there's always hay to be gotten. And there's always, Dad does a lot with corn. He has a huge corn combine. And in the fall of the year, it's his toy. And he combines corn from sun up till sundown. I don't know how many acres of land in this whole area.
What does
area.
He do with the corn? Give it away?
Well, actually, he does it for the farmers. Other farmers have corn that they either don't have the machine to get in or don't have the time to get it in. So he flies his toy all over there. So we say, well, Dad, that was flying. You know, they find the corn combine. So basically, that's what Dad has done. But I was telling you, he was offered the generalship, being a general in the United Air National Guard, several years before he retired. But that meant he would have had to move from Schenectady, therefore move from the farm, and he could no longer fly. And he wanted to continue to fly, and he wanted to continue to keep his family and farm all in the same place, Gettysburg. So he never accepted being a general until he retired.
So he retired a general.
He retired a general. So that was kind of interesting. Meanwhile, my mother is a housewife, has always been a housewife. She's the one that kind of holds it all together, particularly when Dad is off on...
Well, I can imagine. See you next year, Dad.
What a trip. They have 5 kids, 4 girls and a boy. I'm the oldest one, and then I have a sister, Aline, named after my mom. I was born in 1949. She was born in 62. My sister, Leslie.
Who was doing the tours?
Who was doing the tours. Aline's the one that does chicken barbecue.
Yeah.
And Leslie's doing the tours. Leslie's the one who mows the lane, mows the Knickerbocker.
Tell me all about her tractor.
Right, it's so funny. She pulls in here with a flatbed. And I had a girl from the city, one of my friends from the city. I couldn't believe it. My sister pulls in here with a flatbed.
Drives tractor off.
Unloads two mowers. Puts one kid on one mower, one kid on another, and she starts up the weed whacker. They're around the yard, they're done. She loads them back up.
Well, because her husband runs in the equipment place.
Yeah, he runs John Deere's truck. But she's got her license, you know, her commercial license, drives the big truck.
Big semis.
Yeah.
Oh,
she's got her license for that. So, you know, driving a flatbed's no big deal at all. And then she loads it up, and off she goes again. She's a character. Anyway, she was born in 1956. And my brother Steve, he's the one who was flipping pancakes this morning in there.
Okay.
He's in the Air National Guard now. He's not a pilot, but Steve learned to fly. Dad was too busy being a pilot to teach him how to fly, so he got his own pilot license in another way. But he's a teacher. He teaches Philip Livingston Junior High School down in Albany. And so he was here this morning. And then last one come in was Holly, born in 1962. And she was here this morning. She has 2 little girls and a little boy. And she sometimes gives tours, but with 3 little kids,
yeah,
it's really hard for her. And so that's kind of it in a nutshell. What does Dad do for the Historical Society? Right now he's president of the Knickerbocker Historical Society, has been for several years. He does.
Who was really instrumental in saving this place? You and your sister, or did you suck your dad into it?
Well, suck Dad into it is the right word.
Okay.
But this is what happened for saving the place. Back in the winter of 1988, salvageable, and you could walk in there without feeling like it was going to fall in on you. Winter of 1988, the front porch came off and took with it a portion of the front wall, and you could literally stand on the rubble and look right into the main center hall and right out the back door of the Hoosick River. It was really a very sad sight. And one day I sat in and looked at that and said, oh, my goodness. Now, mind you, I had tried to buy the place back in 1977, and they weren't selling. They wouldn't sell to anybody. The Collector Historical Society, several people tried to buy it. The people who were running the society at that time, I really don't know what their objectives were. I'm not sure they had an objective at all, but certainly they were not what mine would have been. And running the society, trying to maintain the mansion or doing anything else. At that point, the mansion was closed. They weren't earning any money. They weren't doing anything.
To raise money?
To raise money. They were just kind of sitting.
In a holding pattern?
Holding pattern. Well, a couple days later, my sister Holly called me. She said, I just drove by the National. It looks awful. I said, I agree with you. Something needs to be done. What do you think? She said, well, I don't know, but I heard they're having a meeting in a couple of nights. And I said, well, let's go. Public organization. We should be able to go to a meeting. So Holly and I and Dad and I think Wesley and I think Holly's husband Mike went. I'm not sure. But I know it was Dad reluctantly pulled along with me and Holly. I'm pretty sure Wesley went. Anyway, we were sitting at the meeting, and the business of the meeting was to discuss how they were going to take down the mansion. And they only had enough money to demolish the mansion and nothing more. So their three proposals were, number one, to call the fire company in and have the fire company torch the mansion and watch it go. Number two, use the demolition estimates they had and have somebody just come in and demolish it and remove the rubble. Or number three, take it down brick by brick, number the bricks, and put it aside until they were able to put it back up again. And those were their three proposals. The cheapest being
burn it.
And after we listened to all that, we said, well, isn't there a way that it can be saved? Well, it's too far gone. Well, how much money would it cost? Well, they had no idea, but nobody could ever raise that amount of money anyway, so it wasn't even worth looking at. So then we said, well, aren't any grants available? Well, yeah, there's some out there, but you know, you've got to match them, and we only have a couple of $1,000, and how can you do that? But we said, well, can we help? Well, we're going to demolish it. We said, can we help? Well, it's coming down. We said, well, we'd like to bring a proposal to you at your next meeting to tell you how we think that it can be saved. And basically they said, well, the agenda for the next meeting is to decide what demolition we're going to do or how we're going to take it down. But it's a public meeting, so yes, you can come. So we said, okay, we will be prepared. So in that month, it was mostly Holly and Leslie and I, did a lot of talking. Found out that there were some grants available, mostly the EQBA grant, but others that were available too for technical assistance and for actual building.
Is it on the historical register then?
Mm-hmm. It was on the register. We found out that they had gotten numerous grants in the past, some of which had really been squandered and not carefully used. We found out that there were some people extremely angry with the way the money had been spent or not spent, depending on your perspective. We found out that they had done virtually nothing in the last few years to alienate everybody.
Was the librarian in this town hooked up with it at that time?
Not the librarian, no.
Okay. So I've heard stories about that librarian doesn't really want anything to do with this or puts it down or whatever.
Most people did put it down.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of it had to do with the attitude. Don't publish this.
No.
A lot of it had to do with the attitude of the people in the Historical Society who were really interesting people to work with.
Yeah.
I mean, they really were tough. And they each had their own idiosyncrasies and their own ways.
Well, that's why I got out of the Connecticut Society of Genealogists. All the board meetings were dueling egos. That's all it was.
Yeah, well,
that's what I call dueling egos. It's like, who's going to be king of the place or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, gee, this is a volunteer thing. I mean, come on, get off of this. You know?
Well, that's the way they were. And a lot of they were mostly all old folks. Well, anyway, so we did our research, and we came up with what we thought was a way the mansion could be saved, which, as it turned out, is the way we have saved the mansion. Proposals for raising money, a statement from an architect, the person of Bob Pierpont, who said it could be saved. That would be quite a price tag to it, but it could be done. And, armed with all kinds of ammunition. At that meeting, the only person who went from us was Holly, because the night that they had said it was the night when all the rest of us wound up with obligations we could not get out of. So Holly went and made her pitch. Well, actually, she went in and they started out with various reports on the demolition again and, you know, reviewing the demolition possibilities. And then Holly said, well, I'd like to tell you about what we have found out. So she went through all the various ways that we proposed to raise money and write grants and save the mansion. And when she was all done, they went back to business at hand, which was to decide how to demolish the mansion. And so they said, okay, you know, let's make a motion and get this mansion demolished. And Holly said, excuse me, are you really talking about demolishing the mansion? They said, well, that's the purpose of the meeting. She said, okay, you're talking demolition, we're talking lawsuits. So if you want to take it down, you're going to have people suing you. We start with this foundation who gave you money, which you didn't spend right. We start with the state who gave you money, and this is what you did to it. There are people waiting in the wings to sue you, both as a corporation and individually. You can be sued if you take down that mansion. In fact, I can guarantee you will be sued. Or you can let us become a special member of the Special Committee of the Knickerbocker Historical Society, and we'll restore it for you. We became a special committee of the Knickerbocker Historical Society.
Well, we could walk away from it. That was your problem.
Yeah. So
that was a good way out for them.
Yeah, well.
They must have loved it.
But they, I mean, you know, basically, they turned the power over to us, and they quit, almost to a person. They quit. And some of them are so mad. One lady, we had a luncheon here last year for some old people. And for the first time we were working on it, one old lady came back. And she's in her country. She was president. She was so mad. We put this place back together again. Unbelievable.
Yeah, she could. She knows how lit up she was.
Yeah. Well, so since then, we have raised and spent over $400,000. Probably outlive all of us and all of our kids, even if we don't do another thing to it. We're continuing to raise money.
Well, that's why I come up here. It's such a special place, and it should be for all of Knickerbocker family, and it really is. You can see by the interest we're generating in such a small family.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how many Knickerbockers there are in the country?
Yeah.
I mean, there isn't, a 1,000 families?
I don't know how many there are.
Well, look at the phone numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really no...
Well, I think we ran off about... There's got to be more than 1,000 now because we ran off almost 1,000 reunion newsletters. We didn't use 1,000. We only used 1,000. That's only the ones that have been named Knickerbocker.
Right. And so I double that.
Yeah.
Okay? There's just as many people who aren't named that yet are in the family.
Yeah.
But it's not very big.
No, it's not.
In my newsletter, for people who really got a little interest in family history, it went out to 150 people this time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge percentage. And, I mean, I'm getting letters in every day from your mailing.
Mm-hmm. Are you really?
Oh. People are going, you're doing Knickerbocker, you know. And, I mean, they thought they were out there alone in the wilderness, you know. And all of a sudden, yeah, well, there's 150 other people that are interested in it. And they go ballistic, you know. Which is exactly what I'm trying to do. My only reason for all this is to try and get enough people interested that they start sending money in and they really focus on this place. You know, the family focuses on this place. And
well, it should be the focal point.
Of course,
I mean, the property goes right back to Herman Hansen. You know,
what a fortunate family to have something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, where everybody with a name is related and you got it. You know, property back to the second generation, probably really the first generation into the country.
Yeah,
you know,
not bad. Not bad. And it's a very special place. People here in Scaticook, I think, don't realize how special it is until they come in here. You know, and not only is it Knickerbocker family, but historically...
What went on in this little valley in here?
Historically, it's a very significant piece of property as well. Forget this, even the family Knickerbocker and that connection. You know, it was an area of major Indian interest for hundreds of years. And then, you know, the Winnetka Oak Peace Treaty that was here, which was not a little thing back when it was done. And it even appears in some history books today, you know. It's a very important, you know, important area. It's a very important house.
I digress from your story here.
From the history. Let's see. I haven't talked much about Mom outside of, but, you know, the support she gave Dad, but... I'll only tell you, first off, Dad, other than Dad being part of the Historical Society, he's the one who kind of, he's always been a jack of all trades, so if something needs fixing, Dad's the one who fixes it. You know, he does the electrical work, he's the one who kind of supervises the operation of whatever it happens to be. He's the one that tells us, well, you can't do it unless you do this. You know, he's the one who kind of is very presidential about the whole thing. Mom, meanwhile, her contributions are mostly in the baking of, you know, I would guess that half of our money is earned just in food that we cook and the various things we do concerning food. And Mom does a lot of cooking involvement whenever we do the bake sales and making pies and cakes. So sounds like a little thing, but you know, we have a bake sale, we make $400.
How much money did you raise last year?
I would guess somewhere around $10,000. And it's probably more than that if you count in donations. But I mean, fundraisers, like having the house open like this, and it doesn't look like there are many people here today. You know, when we get done, I bet we made $500. And you wonder where it came from.
Sure.
You know?
So, in 89, you guys were sitting here with this falling down building.
Yes.
You had to get enough money to put some covers over it.
Well, what we did was, let me go back and finish Mom and Dad's.
Yeah.
Well, Mom's other contribution, not counting cooking food, is probably as big as anything else, because when all of us other people were looking to do work for the Knickerbocker Mansion, and they had six dogs and little kids, Mom usually wound up being our babysitter for her grandchildren. I think she never minded having her grandkids around, but she's wound up taking care of more than her fair share of grandchildren in the name of Knickerbocker. You know, and I have seven kids, and so I always had a little one, two, or three. You know, my youngest is now six, but when I started, my youngest was then two, and it was Scott, who's now running around out here someplace, and he was crawling under the tables of all the meetings I was going to, so I wound up leaving him with Mom so I could go do what I needed to do. And the same way with Leslie and Holly, and, you know, Mom just wound up, and Ellie just wound up leaving the little kids with Mom. So one of her bigger contributions, which nobody would even acknowledge, is her babysitting, you know. So
the rest of us could go do things.
Could go do it. So, now back to the history of our restoration here. 88, after we had saved the mansion, after we'd saved it from the wrecking ball, and the Historical Society, we got a technical grant from the National Trust for Historic Preservation to do what's called an existing condition survey, and basically that was to hire Bob Pierpont, our architect, to go to the mansion. And when he got all done with that, he said it was going to cost about $600,000. And said in a general sense what we had to do. And the smart thing he did, which I think saved everybody's life, including our own, was instead of him saying, look, you need $600,000 to save the mansion, go find it now or forget it, he said, you can't possibly do this all in one shot. Why don't you break it out into various phases?
Priorities.
And so that's exactly what he did. He said, first it's got to be stabilized, and this is what it's going to cost. And then you need to rebuild your front wall, and this is what it's going to cost. And then you need to rebuild your back wall, and this is what it's going to cost. And you need to do your roof, and this is what it's going to cost. And that master plan that he put together for us is exactly what we have now. And he's been very much right on with
prices. He's still involved with it?
He's still our architect. He still does it all. He's a historic preservation architect. That's what he does the best. And as far as I'm concerned, he's been wonderful in his approach to this whole project. He's been exactly what we needed. And it may not have worked were it not for him being able to break it out and saying, you know, this is the way it ought to be. Don't try to do it all in one shot, because if you look at $600,000 and try
to do it,
you couldn't have done it. But breaking it out like that, we're not on his timetable. Not on our own timetable. We're way off of that. But hey, we're still going.
You're making progress. I mean, a little thing like this back here, what did that do? That must have cost
$20,000,
$30,000. Yeah, that was $25,000. Yeah, I mean, really, it doesn't. How many people want to come through here? But I bet you have to do that to get more money from the state or something.
Well, it sure helps. Well, we had, when we got the grant, it was actually supposed to be for the front and back porch, with a handicap access ramp off the back porch. And it wasn't this kind of a ramp. In doing it, when Bob finished the plans for a front porch, back porch, and everything else, he said, you know, you don't want to put a back porch or ramp on that back porch. I said, why not? That's a good place for
it.
Yeah, well, that's what he said. First off, it's going to destroy. You got 35 feet of ramp you need.
Cut the porch.
And it's all going to be exterior ramp. It says it's all going to get slippery. It's all going to deteriorate. He said, you know what? The better thing to do would be to put it inside. I said, what are you talking about?
That's a good use for that little side building.
Well, and he said, you know, the back of that wooden frame addition, which we hadn't gone to, is a wreck, and it was. That wooden frame addition is pretty bad, but the back wall was really horrendous. And he said, you know, you put the money into shoring up your back wall and putting half the ramp inside and then the other half outside, you've got a much better use of your money than doing
kitchens.
Nice.
Right. Yeah, it looks beautiful
out there. Plus, there are some old Knickerbockers who want to get in, who come to some of our events, and they can't get in because they can't get beyond the wooden frame addition steps, you know? There's this little old lady, we call her Beep Beep.
Yeah,
the one we related to, Catherine Veely. She parks, they're not here today, but they park outside here. And she has always, she wanted to go in the first time she came so badly.
Yeah.
And she only got the kitchen, she couldn't get any further.
Yeah.
And so now, if she's got a wheelchair,
we can
get her all the way in. So that was the best use, you know, best use of the money, I think. Even though we don't have porches, I think it's still the best thing we could have done.
Porches are critical right now.
Mom, Leslie was having a fit anyway. She said, you know, I do porches. I don't let the kids who are vandals will crawl up on them and try to pry up the plywood. You don't want to do that. So anyway, we went from Bob Pierpont's recommendations in that existing condition survey to we got lucky. I applied for an Environmental Quality Bond Act grant, called EQBA, which requires matching money. And I also at the same time applied for member item funding from Senator Bruno's office. Got $50,000 in member item from Senator Bruno.
Can we match that?
And no, that's not a match. That's straight give us the money. And then I applied for $50,000 for member item, not knowing how in the world we were going to match $50,000.
Yeah.
But we did. And we had a year from the date. We were awarded the grant, so we had a year to the next year, 1 year to make the match, and God, we did. I still wonder about that. And that $150,000 stabilized the building and rebuilt the front wall. And then the next year, I applied for another member item, got a $20,000 member item, and then another $50,000 EQBA, and in 93, that's the back wall, back foundation, and black wall. And in the meantime, we've gotten little grants along the way to kind of help out, but the next big chunk
you turned into a full-time grant writer.
I can spend days writing grants. I have gotten over $240,000 in grants. And at this point, I know how to work them, and I know how to make it happen.
Yeah.
Our only problem is that there are so few foundations and granting agencies that will give money for actual buildings. That's our big thing, and it's getting harder and harder to find.
Yeah.
The roof was another EQBA grant. Actually, the last EQBA grant. Listen to this. Last bit of money in the state for EQBA. There were, I don't know, over 200 applications statewide. 13 agencies got a grant, and we were one of them.
it's like all government money. It gets harder and harder to get.
But we got one of them. That was
the
group. And telling him the history of our building.
I'm recording
it. And he's recording it of all things. Isn't that terrible?
I hope he's doing that.
Not yet. So, and then I get the member item for the ramp. And actually, now I've got to go after this next EPF money for the windows. If the state, the EQBA money's gone. That's completely shot. So now we're into what's called Environmental Protection Fund money from New York State, which has a historic preservation component to it. But the unfortunate thing for us is that the Commissioner of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation can designate how that money's supposed to be spent. And if she, for example, were to say, we are going to spend all historic preservation money this year on dealing with wetlands on historic properties.
That's it.
But if she were to say some of this money can go toward exterior restoration, then I can do windows or porches or something like that. The other kicker on this particular grant, which is killing me right now, and I think I know how we're going to try to solve it, although I don't think it's going to be as effective as we've been in the past, is that it's a matching type of grant. We have to have a match up front before you apply. The EQBA, you could get the grant and then match it. Now, if you have your match in hand and then you apply, and, of course, we don't have I think if we put our money that we have available for this sort of stuff together right now, we've probably got about $5,000. That's not multiplied very well. So I think whenever I find out what we fall into the category, or I may even do it with others, send our newsletter and the Knickerbocker, maybe some, the Knickerbocker letter out, and say, this is what it's going to cost for us to do windows. This is how much we've got. If we are able to get the grant, this is how much we need, and, you know, ask for it.
Sure.
And then say, if anybody would like to donate a full amount of a window, which I think is somewhere in the neighborhood of $23,000.
Or a couple people get together.
We will put your name on a plaque next to the
sure.
window. And,
I think that makes
and,
sense.
And then I may say, if we don't get the grant, we are still going to go ahead and do however many windows we have the money for. And
we'll still put your name on the window.
Well, you never know. That can stick. You know, there's people around you don't realize they have a few bucks and they'll go for something like that.
Oh,
sure.
There's 1, 2, 3, 4.
So what's that, around $50,000 to do all the windows?
23.
Even out here in the sticks.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have vandals who try
yeah.
to get all the time.
Like the other night. They couldn't get the back. They pulled the back door open, but we've got the Dutch door. So they couldn't get in. So they had their McDonald's meal on the ground outside. I was picking up McDonald's wrappers all this morning. I was hoping there was a receipt in the bag so I could find out what night they were here and
maybe
what time.
Maybe just a few signs up saying that the place is alarmed.
Well,
do wonders keep them
yeah.
away from there.
Well, the other thing is, we thought if we put an electric fence about knee high, my dear.
You better watch out, then you get sued. You know?
Not if you say watch out, high voltage.
Careful. Because they're only 16 years old and they can't read and write.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that may be true.
So anyway, that's kind of where we are. But those are definitely the next thing. I'm going to have to. Actually, what I'm waiting for, I'm not going to know on the EPS until the state budget gets approved. We are now a month and a half late on our state budget. As soon as I know that, then all of a sudden things are going to start galloping along. And then next year I'll go back to Senator Bruno and ask him for more money for in the form of member items.
Is there any federal money around?
There really isn't. They claim
I have to do the same thing. We have to come up with matching money to get this latest federal contract. That's the way they run.
Yeah.
But we were the first company in the country to qualify for this Small Business Innovative Research Program. We got $1 million. We're a two-person company. We got $1 million contract from the government. And the company that's supporting it that we've licensed the technology to, they're going to kick in $600,000 or $700,000 over the next couple of years. And a couple of weeks ago, we got notified we just won another $300,000 program from the National Science Foundation.
Well, we can move like that, too.
I mean, it's feast or famine. A year ago, I thought we were going out of business.
I know.
I didn't. I mean, we were taking half pay. I mean, we were struggling, okay? And this year, it's like, that's the way it always is. But two years from now, we can be out of business again, because if the contracts run out, we're not going to keep the place open and pay rent and do all of that kind of stuff. I mean, it's a crazy business. We just invent things. We don't sell anything. We just license people off and do patents and stuff like that. So.
Wow.
But it's the same thing. If we didn't come up with that matching money, you wouldn't have got a nickel.
Yeah. No, that's a similar thing. There is money, you know, people like to say federally, there is money, federally for historic preservation. But when you look at it, what it is mostly technical assistance. So if we needed an architect to do design or planning, but we have, except for the wooden part of the mansion, our design is all done. And I've got the blueprints even, you know. We're done. All we need to do is go out to bid on it, whatever it happens to be. You know, windows or porches, I've got the plan. We don't find any federal money that's going to fit what we really need. And so it's the state money. There are some other local small foundations, but you've really got to have an in. And it's been interesting that the times when I have finally made it happen, I have been kind of pushing at them, and then finally got mad at them, you know.
And then they pay
attention, and the next thing you know, we're able to get some funding. But I really had to get very, very pushy with them.
This is just like any place else. It's where does the money come from? That's what drives the whole thing.
Yeah. So, but I feel happy with what we've done so far. And
it's amazing. Like you say, you're almost 2/3 of the way there.
Yeah.
Then you can start thinking about making a museum out of it, or whatever you do.
No. One of us has got to
put it. Well, I'm still talking. I'll do the next one. Unless you want to be Kate.
No, I got three.
Oh, God, Leslie. Without my attire.
No, I just ran through quick. Just, you know, so people can get a sense of it. Because I will. I'll copy those tapes and send them out. Who knows? You know, you turn, or you never know when you're going to turn somebody on and they're going to turn into a real supporter.
Yeah. Well, there are some very wealthy.
Of course there is.
I've got to go down and visit this William.
I just got the guy who owns the painting?
Yeah, that's him.
He wrote me a letter.
Oh,
last
did he
week.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to get back to him.
Oh, what did he say?
Oh, well, he was really tooting his own horn. Okay, in this case.
This is William Kelly Simpson, right? Yes.
Yeah. He's kind of pompous. If
I have a feeling.
Through the letter. But,
yeah,
I mean, that's just between you and
me.
His sister's
even more pompous, especially when
okay.
he is. Yeah.
But I think he could be a real contributor here.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I'm going to ask him to do. I'm going to ask him to write something for the newsletter or... We'll do something here.
Well,
okay?
He's only ever given us $500.
Yeah.
And I have spent.
You know, he teaches at Yale. I mean, this guy is.
I know he's a big gun, and I've actually been wanting to get down there to see the, because he in the last letter he wrote to me, he said that I could come down and look at the, you know, the portrait.
In fact, he sent me a few other copies of the things that you have over there.
I need more of those. People want those. Knickerbocker people want those. And I was going to ask him if he could...
Donate some or
give me a negative so I could have some made. If he would allow that, I'd even put his name on the back or whatever he needed to make
but
that.
But he's got other stuff, too. I mean, in the family, they got furniture. They got all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Well, did you hear how he got that conversation piece? Did he tell you? If the story I got is correct?
I think at auction.
Yeah. Well, apparently, he was at the auction. He's loaded. And my understanding is that somehow his money is Rockefeller money. And I don't know if that's the case, but that's... The way the story came to me, and I only know from the story, there's a woman who's a Knickerbocker descendant of the DuPont, and she's loaded. And the group here has always tried to be in touch with her. At this point, she's extremely old. I'll be surprised she's not dead. And this group here always tried to get money out of her. She always gave the excuse that she couldn't really give much because her family was very careful about the charities they supported, and her own individual money would have to go to that, and so she would occasionally send $1,000, but she wasn't a big helper. And apparently, when this portrait was auctioned off, she was there to, she or a representative was there to bid on the painting, and this other guy was there, so it wound up being DuPont money against Rockefeller money, and I guess it was a real duel. to the end. That's what I hear, that thing really went for a ton of money. And now, whether or not that's true, I don't know, but a guy who was in the barn, wrote me the information about the barn, because he's been thinking about what happened to the barn here, and who also followed the trail of the Knickerbocker furniture out of here and around, because he
apparently
was,
got auctioned in Litchfield or someplace. Yeah. Down
he's the one who told me about this, and he apparently was there. So it must have been fun.
If I had known about it. It must have been years ago, though.
It was before we got involved.
Yeah. Because
yeah.
Even then, if I had known about it, I would have gone myself.
Well, I would have, too.
I would have mortgaged the house and bought the stuff.
We would have, too. In fact, when we had known that there was Knickerbocker stuff here. And then that was always the word. And then when we, in 1988, when all of a sudden Knickerbocker Historical Society became ours, we said, okay, where's our furniture? It's gone.
Gone?
Yeah, it's gone. Where'd it go? Oh, it's auction.
Who got the money?
Where? We didn't. The money didn't come here. Somehow, the connection was that it belonged to Catherine Knickerbocker, wife of John, who sold the house. And apparently, the stuff was here. Some of it was here. And according to the story that I've gotten from Chet Hack, who was about the only good guy and all the bad guys who were left here, and he occasionally comes down to visit us here. He said that some of the stuff that was Knickerbocker, original Knickerbocker stuff that was here, that Catherine left here, some of the Historical Society members were afraid that something was going to happen to it. So rather than keep it locked up or taking it to someplace storage, they gave it back to Catherine. Then Catherine didn't want it.
Did everything do it? Out the door. Insanity.
I mean, it's done stuff like that. I mean, so we have zero original stuff here. Zero. We can find original stuff around the country, but we have zero original things, which is really a shame.
Yeah, because that would have been key to putting the place back together, just a few furnishings.
We do have... And up there some antiques, and there's a couple of old sofas and tables and things like that. But we have a really old, I'll call it turn of the century picture of the mansion that has those things in it. But it's not original. It's not close to original. I know it's not original stuff. So, anyway, it's all about frustration.
You have to live with it. There's nothing you can do.
We have the house.
Effect.
I mean, what are you going to do?
You got that.
We've got the house. It's got all the original floors. It's got all the original ghosts.
And you're having fun.
And we're having fun. We've got the cemetery. Nobody can take those tombstones away from us unless they knock them over.
Unless they rot away. That's what I'm worried about. Get me that stuff. I'm going to make a crusade out of it. Get somebody who's really into tombstone preservation and
I'll
stuff.
I'll ask Carolyn. Because she said she
those things are going away up there. I can see even from last year.
Yeah, I can tell too.
The acid rain is really getting them.
I used to be able to read Rebecca's, and I can't read Rebecca's anymore. So... You know, I want to hear something really interesting. I have a daughter who, before I knew Knickerbocker family stuff, my daughter who's now 18, her name is Rebecca Elizabeth, spelled R-E-B-E-C-K-A-H. And come to find out, her two great-grandmother Knickerbocker, once Rebecca and Elizabeth, spelled exactly that way. And I didn't know that when I named her Rebecca Elizabeth. I had no idea. I just liked the name.
Looks like I've got an uncle that's named Lawrence. Comes all the way down through. I mean, it just, these names keep getting
carried. Yeah, but I didn't know it. There was no other
it's
Rebecca.
It's like there's something in your head that says, oh, you got to name your kid this or something. No. And spell it this strange way.
I know. There was no other one around. I mean, the spelling was a spelling I liked. It was very different. I said to my husband, what do you say? He said, yeah, I like it. Let's do it.
Mm.
And then I come down here and look on the grave. There's Rebecca.
Yeah.
I'm like,
oh, yeah. That's something. Named after a great-grandmother or whatever, you know.
Great-grandmother, several greats way back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about the connection in our family between the Hemstreets and the Knickerbockers, there were a couple of old, old cousins who now live in my sister's house up here at the original Hemstreet farm. My sister now lives there. And they were ancient in the 1960s, so they remembered Cordelia and Jacob very well, Cordelia being the Knickerbocker granddaughter and Jacob being the Hemstreet who married her. And the stories that they used to tell about them, I'm so glad I remember them.
Have you put them down?
No, I haven't. And I've got to do that. Although my mother has some of it on tape. But I ought to put it down. But
oh, yeah.
That's
the one thing you have to do.
You have to write.
Is do something to save some of the memories. Well, that's the thing that you always lose.
Uh-huh.
Gravestones are there. I mean, the house is there and, you know, stuff like that. Vital records are there. But
And Dale and Uncle Jake, they would call them. And, unfortunately, apparently Cordelia inherited a bunch of Knickerbocker goodies. I don't know what all. And they moved up, actually, only a couple miles from where my parents live, up there on, quote-unquote, the plains of Scaticook, which is that area. And the house burned down, and everything in it went. I had an old uncle who was an eccentric character, and some guy rode by and said, you've got a chimney fire. And he looked up and he said, just burning. The house burned down. That chimney fire, and he didn't get anything out. Apparently she had Knickerbocker silver, because the daughters are the ones in the family who got
all of that stuff.
Got the silver. The boy, when Johannes died, he had four sons and six daughters. And the four sons, each got over 300 acres of land. And then the six daughters got the silver spoon.
True.
And so Elizabeth, one of the daughters, who was Cordelia's mother, got spoons, which I'm and silver and all kinds of things, and I'm sure she passed on to Cordelia. Who and my grandmother even remembers the things. How she says, "How beautiful! A lot of beautiful old things from Knickerbocker. All but gone, completely shot." In fact, she was pretty uppity too, because her son Arthur, who's my great grandfather, married. He was like his late 20s or 30s. And when he married my great grandmother, apparently the Verbeck family that the woman he married was my great grandmother. They were just mere farmers, and apparently not a society with the Knickerbocker gang. And my Aunt Cordelia did not have anything to do with my great grandmother. And an old aunt, my grandfather's sister, their first child, Mova, when she was in her 90s, she was still alive. This was after my grandfather died. I wrote her a long letter, and I asked her, "Do you remember?" And she wrote me back, answering my questions, what she remembered. She, first time she remembered seeing her grandmother was when she was six. And because her father took her. Can you imagine, this is her grandmother?
Before, like,
and because I don't think she ever saw my great-grandmother after she married my great-grandfather, Miss Cordelia. So she was pretty much a snob. She was a Knickerbocker. If you're a Knickerbocker, you can afford to be a snob. I bet that's who that is.
Look like my.
They're the only ones who drive right there. Oh, God. Oh, geez.
Well, you get to check out your ramp here.
Yeah, that's who it is. That's who it is.
Anything else you want to say about your dad?
Oh, anything else I want to say about Dad? I got to say, Dad at first was not excited about this project. He couldn't imagine what we were going to do with it. But he's pretty proud of it now. Pretty excited, I think, that we've managed to maintain it and improve it and make it all happen. He's down here doing a variety of different things. Different things that you wouldn't imagine. I mean, he's the one that ran the ditch digger the day that we were digging the ditch and we found the Indian garbage pit. And, he did a lot with the ditch digging up here. He's just kind of around doing all those unusual things that you ordinarily...
That you have to do. You can't afford to hire anybody to do it.
Yeah. Any electrical work, he's the one who... And his latest pitch isn't the mansion. His latest pitch is, we don't put a roof on this building.
I said that to Johnny Twain. I said, boy, if you guys don't get a roof on there, that place is going to fall down.
Yeah. Yeah, we desperately need a new roof up there. The other thing...
Well, that costs about $5,000 to do that.
Yeah. Anybody with a quick $5,000? We do need it, though. It's
yeah, because you can't let that building.
No. And see it in the attic. Even though we don't have any real Knickerbocker antiques, there are a number of antiques up on the second floor. That whole second floor is loaded with stuff.
And the roof can't. You got to fix
that roof. That roof has got to be fixed. So the other thing he has done battle with there was a point, we don't have any water here. Don't publicize that to the health department. But there was a point in the cellar, and there was water. And he has gone down 16 feet with a point, and he really can't get any water out. He's gone crazy.
Point's climbed up.
You're going to have to talk to him about the story on the point. It's been an interesting experience, but we still don't have water. We've got to get water here somehow. That may mean...
Can't you have a local well digger that'll come over and donate a little bit of casing and drive you something down there?
I don't think we even need to go that far, but we're going to have to do something soon because we really don't have any water.
Yeah, and as you get further along, you're going to have to think about indoor bathrooms.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, part of Pierpont's plan is that this would become our quote-unquote visitor center with some bathrooms, and actually the upstairs would be a caretaker's apartment, which would then taking care of the property.
Yep.
And that can all work in, except Manchin's got to get done first, so that's very much on hold.
Can't do it all, but yeah, water's important, especially cooking here and everything else.
Because we bring in all of our water. We haul the water, and of course we have our outdoor restroom. And it works, you know, and at this point, I'm so...
Well, you can't afford to go spend $20,000 putting water and johns and everything.
Oh,
so that's what we're calling
it. Yeah, and we don't have that kind of money right now. And actually, it's very nice not to have to worry about something freezing up, you know.
Yeah, up in this neighborhood, you better believe.
And in the winter,
you don't heat these places.
No, well, there was never central heat in this house. It was only fireplaces, and then they had wood stoves, and that's as far as it ever went. So, we shouldn't even worry about central heat. And we're going to have to do something when we finally get it done. We're calling it a historic education. It will be a historic education center because we'll probably...
I saw what they were doing to the kids over there today. That's good. Teach the kids some history.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no better way to teach somebody history is bring them into a historic site.
Yeah. Well, we'll probably do 2 or 3 rooms in period furniture. Probably the main parlor, the fancy dining room, and the upstairs master bedroom. And we have old enough furniture to do that well. And then probably other rooms are going to be for the Indian history, Native American, because we have a lot of goodies from that and a lot of other good information. The agricultural aspect. They were farmers. They continue to farm. I mean, look at the fields.
Yep.
And the local history. There's no other place right around here that does anything with real local history. And the Knickerbocker family history. There's so much we could do just with that. A lot of prominent Knickerbockers around.
Yeah, if it's nothing but just a focus for the family. I mean, that's like they're doing the reunion here. That's very important.
Yeah. By the way, Dad, you got my email with a date for next year.
Yeah.
We decided we would get it out now so that we could start promoting it for the
family. Yeah. Because I think things are picking up. At least I sense there's more of a buzz. There's more and more people. And, you know, they realize this is for real up here. All of a sudden, we're up to the third reunion, talking about the fourth one. And, you know, people are getting excited. They want to take part. Some people really get turned on to that stuff.
Yeah, they do. I think one of those every 5 or 10 years would be enough for me. But as long as they're going to come to the mansion and take a look at it and enjoy being here.
That's how you sell a place.
Yeah.
That's how you get supporters.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is a site that, you know, is important to the Knickerbockers for lots of reasons. So I'm glad to have them come and visit and give tours and tell them the history and the connection. And I've just got to get talking to Beth Crawford, the historian who did our work, and see her sources for some of the stuff and get some things here hopefully for the reunion.
I think it came out of that family Bible at the... Albany State Library, if I remember them. And that's wrong. Okay.
The family Bible.
One of them is. One of them's right, and one of them is a fabrication.
What I'm looking for to bring to the reunion would not be the Bible. It's First Church down in Albany. I think they have a registry of baptisms and visitors and all
that. Lawrence, I think, was the first one baptized down here, the first record.
And I would like to get copies of those.
People would love to have just a copy of a copy. You could sell those.
Yeah, we could. Yeah.
Okay.
But I got to get to First Church and get into their archives. And
although I suspect those records are probably at the state library. Okay. All those early records,
maybe
they don't
have
keep
now.
Them around. They're too valuable anymore.
Well, First Church may. First Church is a real going museum type place. I gave a talk down there this past winter, and I mean it's different from a regular church. They have services, they have a regular congregation, but there's another whole historic component to it. So I've got to, and it may be that they've taken the stuff out. I don't know, but I was there on a tour several years ago, and they had original stuff then.
Okay. Because in Connecticut, they've gotten all of that stuff out of town halls.
Yeah.
All the early records, because it's too much of a
First Church is what it is. It's the First Church in Albany. It's where they went whenever they came. So that's not that far away. I just got to get my mother.
Standing here the same way as me. It's finding time to do all. There's all kinds of new things to do.
There's great and wonderful things to do. I also have to, actually my first priority before that, though, was tracking down money for the windows. Either through EPS
that's the most important job right now. The rest of it, the records aren't going to change. They're down there. They're not going to change. The history that you get from people, the oral histories, it's important to get some of that. If you've got any of it, get it down someplace, because that is lost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it only means something to a small chunk of the family and stuff, but 100 years from now, somebody's going to think that is really neat stuff, you know?
Well, I think the unfortunate part about this family, this branch of the family, the Johannes branch, does not seem to be as prolific as the Lawrence group. I mean, Johannes, he and Anna just had two or three living kids. And then the next Johannes, he and Rebecca only had two who made it
to adulthood
to have kids. Now, fortunately, one of them was Johannes, who managed to have a whole school.
Yep.
but the Lawrence
tribe is probably 90% of the Knickerbockers. Everybody you run into is...
They started off with a bang, and they kept on going. And this group really got stuck early on, you know, only having a couple who could make it, so to speak. And until you got to Johannes and Elizabeth, and then they did their fair share. And there are plenty of those.
But it was three generations later.
Yeah.
You don't catch up.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't, because Lawrence has gone.
There's 100 times as many of them by three generations later.
And actually, I suspect that my family has more ties in to the Knickerbockers than just
even those.
The two that
you can study back.
Well, the thing is, I've not followed every trail back, but...
Yeah, it's... You have to turn into a real genealogy nut and start looking at all of these other lines that came down and try and start tying. And, you know, I've got 4,000 Knickerbockers in the computer that are attached,
mm-hmm.
and there's more to go in, and I still can't answer 1 in 10 queries people are looking for something. You're never going to get it all.
Yeah.
Well, like Bertrand just wrote up on the email there, was his great-grandfather's great-great-grandfather wasn't using Knickerbocker.
He was using Baker.
Which would probably be very common, because most people probably hated the name Knickerbaker or Knickerbacker. Like, geez, let's do something simple, because, I mean, it was real easy in those days. Did it.
Yeah.
Nobody cared.
Well, even the signatures that are down in the books down in Albany that Johannes did and Herman Jansen, they never spelled their name twice the same. They're all different. However, the spirit moved them whenever he picked up the pen.
It wasn't that important to him, I don't think. I really suspect the Dutchman, and the last name, he was always Herman Jansen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the Nick.
And that was the important part. The rest of it, it was just from Van Wy or from Bommel or whatever struck them at the moment, you know, whatever they felt like using.
Yes. Well, it's fun anyway.
Okay, I'm going to write up some stuff off of our talk here and send it up to you before I do anything.
Do you want a picture of Mom and Dad?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I have I have two different ones I can offer you. One is just my parents. At Christmas time, Mom and Dad had all of us get together.
Why don't you get the whole thing? You got one of the whole family group? Yeah, I get that thing much better.
Yep,
get the whole gang and identify everybody on the whole page. All the Hem Streets, the whole gang of them. I mean, that'd be much better.
Well, actually, yeah? that would be very appropriate because every single one of them winds up being involved here, one way or another.
Exactly, and that's what I want to do because I want to do, you know, we'll because, I mean, you don't have that many volunteers up here, and I like writing about the people that are working up here, but I'm going to run out of people here pretty quick, you know. You're not... Else you're going to have to start recruiting some more volunteers around here. I wish I was closer so I could come up. I mean, that's the problem.
We have our family, which somehow becomes kind of the core of the whole thing. And actually, there were many people that have said, you know, if the family hadn't gotten involved,
it
wouldn't have happened.
No, of course.
It had to be family people who were involved. So. Somehow, I think Johannes and Elizabeth.
Yeah, and you've got a special kind of family. You're all a bunch of, you know, stick to it kind of people. You must get it from your dad, you know. And you get on a cause like this, and you can't let it go.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to see it through to the end here, come hell or high water, and that doesn't happen that often.
You know, there's a side benefit to the whole thing. So, and I think it's been wonderful in that while we're all here. If we didn't
keep
have
the family
this,
together.
We would never be working on anything. You know,
you
we
would
listen to each other for
yeah,
birthdays
Christmas yeah.
and passing in the store.
Now you got something real that you're doing together.
We do it together all the time.
And it's
great to have a common job with all my siblings. I would say that more than half of the phone calls I ever make to them are all about Knickerbocker. Mm-hmm. You know, we may tack on the other, oh yeah, by the way, are you going to do this, or do you have that, or can I borrow this? But in the meantime, the fact of the matter is that we're talking Knickerbocker.
And just think what that does for your kids.
Oh, yeah.
What a model it is.